son. Abe said, man, you must be putting me on. God said, no. Abe said, what? God said, you can do what you want, Abe, but next time you see me coming, you better run.
That's the title track of Bob Dylan's 1965 album, Highway 61 Revisited. And it's a song he's been performing on his Australian tour, which started on Wednesday in Perth. Alex Ross is music critic of The New Yorker. He's been a guest on this show a few times now. He's best known, I suppose, for his book The Rest Is Noise, Listening to the 20th Century, and a companion volume, Listen to This. He's a big Bob Dylan fan, though he came to Dylan late, as he explained a few years ago on this show.
This was an enthusiasm which came over me rather suddenly. It was 1995, actually. Until that time, I hadn't really paid any attention to Bob Dylan. And then I was in Berlin for the summer and staying at a friend's apartment who was out of town. He only had a few CDs, and I was sort of desperate for music to listen to while I was working, and eventually worked my way to Highway 61 Revisited. And almost overnight, I became obsessed with it and obsessed with Bob Dylan. And within a few months, it had progressed to the point where I was sort of poking around the Greenwich Village stores, picking up bootlegs and you know, buying all the commercial albums and cornering people at parties and sort of, you know, assaulting them with my Bob Dylan enthusiasm. And I'm not quite sure what it was, because, you know, unlike Radiohead and Björk, some of the other sort of popular artists that I write about in this new book, where there are obvious connections with the classical tradition and especially with 20th century music. A lot of the songs are really infused by that. With Dylan, it's much more traditional. It's very rooted in the folk tradition and in the sort of the very basic side of rock and roll. But obviously there's this enormous sophistication as well. But I think what I most came to appreciate when I really started getting into Dylan was the sheer scope of his career and the fact that he was always changing and sort of had his ups and downs, but this very powerful personality remained, and you can, you know, feel it at each stage of his career maturing. And I think especially when he wrote Not Dark Yet, the album Time Out of Mind, speaking very openly and honestly about growing old, which is not something you hear about a lot in rock and roll, in pop music. It's such a youth-oriented culture, and it's just, you know, not done really.
Well, but until now, there were only young people in rock music, and then some of them, you know, didn't die before they got old. And
this is
the result.
But Dylan is you know, absolutely, I think, frank and candid about the emotions of growing older. And so his career ended up seeming to me to have the kind of breadth and almost a vastness of the great careers in classical music, and you know, a personality like Verdi, you know, moving through the phases of his careers and growing deeper as he got older. So maybe there's a little bit of the same with Dylan.
It's not dark yet, but it's getting there.
Well, that's actually only about the midpoint of this rather beautiful song, Not Dark Yet, from Bob Dylan's album Time Out of Mind. My guest on the music show is Alex Ross, a music critic of The New Yorker, who's in Australia. One of the things you write about Dylan is, well, we're almost hearing it now, except this isn't the end of the song, but how when he's playing live, there's always one or two goes round after he's finished singing, the band just keeps playing through the changes. And I don't know that anybody else has ever remarked on that. I've never read anybody else remarking on that. And it is a beautiful moment in a Dylan concert when the times they are changing, for instance, just goes on and on after he's finished singing.
Yeah, and I think it has a particular effect with Dylan because, you know, in a way it's a standard move in this tradition, sort of, you know, playing through the changes one more time. But you somehow, you still hear his voice on some level, you know, his, you know, to take away the words and to be left with the music itself. Well, first of all, it shows just how solid these songs are. I mean, they are absolutely unerring in terms of how they're constructed. Very simple, but so sure-footed in terms of how one chord follows the other and how that sort of underpins the meaning of the texts. And then there's these little Baroque additions that are made as the players sort of add flourishes here and there, so it keeps building. But then when the voice stops and you're just with the music, it's as if you sort of remember what he's already said, and perhaps there's some kind of imaginary kind of Dylan text still playing in your mind. But it's very intense, I think, because something comes rushing in there, and you're almost feeling a nostalgia for the song as it's coming to an end.
Yes, that's right. You want it to go on, don't you? You said that you were trying to kind of make a connection between Dylan and classical tradition, and I suppose the most obvious tradition is the voice and the use of the voice, because although there are people who claim that Dylan can't sing, in actual fact, he inhabits his songs very strongly, doesn't he? Like an opera singer in a way.
And just the fusion of voice and text and music is really total. So you can't sort of remove one factor from it. And the songs are never quite the same when they're sung by others, although there have been some outstanding versions over the years. I mean, above all, it's with the aura of his voice where they truly come to life. And I think there is something very deep here. I mean, the songs with their very firm bass lines and sort of relatively simple chord changes, and then this element of the voice gathering intensity as the song goes on. It reminds me of Baroque arias. Mm. And in fact, you do sometimes find the precise same bass lines and chord changes sort of underpinning these songs. And as I talk about in one essay in the new book, at some point in the mid-60s, Dylan started using this chromatic descending bass line, which was really originated in the 17th century, in which you hear in Dido's Lament by Purcell and a number of other classic arias. And a few people had been, not quite sure why, focusing on this bass line again in the 60s, but Dylan in Ballad of a Thin Man, and then later in the 70s, I think the ultimate example, A Simple Twist of Fate, really used that bass line with such expressive intensity it's like a reawakening of that Baroque
tradition.
I
think that's perhaps the most important part of the new book, which is that essay that sort of traces this descending bass line across the centuries. But I guess you did it partly out of the desire to show that there are strong connections between different sorts of music.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in a way, it's also a bit of a philosophical inquiry into the question of, well, can a particular string of notes have intrinsic meaning? And, I focus a lot on this descending pattern, which is so often associated with lament. And I'm sort of asking, well, does this pattern have lament, sort of grief and sorrow built into it? And the answer, of course, is yes and no. I mean, you can find a lot of examples supporting that thesis, but you can also find counterexamples. And around the world, you find such a pattern being used in different ways. But I think especially as the Baroque period went along, it did acquire a very specific connotation and was sort of implanted in music thereafter, and then it sort of comes back in the late 20th century in quite a dramatic way, and you hear it in a lot of pop music today. It's really become a standard gesture, sort of almost a cliche, and maybe has lost some of that intensity that Dylan originally brought to it.
They sat together in the park as the evening sky grew dark. She looked at him and he felt a spark tingle to his bones. 'Twas then he felt alone and wished that he'd gone straight and watched out for a simple twist of fate.
Bob Dylan's Simple Twist of Fate from his 1975 album Blood on the Tracks, and I hope you enjoyed the bass line. That was Alex Ross on The Music Show in 2011. He's music critic of The New Yorker and author of The Rest is Noise and Listen to This, and there's a big book on Wagner on its way.